So.
Because I forgot about it, so I took my meds, we could go in half night.
No problem. I'm going back over here. Oh. Sharon and I have this.
Just wanted to go.
Yeah, feel free to grab a napkin.
Feel free to use the bicycle.
Sure, but I
just grab with napkin and on.
I know that there's
and I think given our crowd size, you're probably fine to take one or two.
Oh, so there's nothing now that I know he's going
to be there. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, use that.
I got mine.
Was issue 8 ever published?
It was. It's in collection 2. Oh, we were talking about issue 9. Issue 9 was never physically published.
I'm trying to get your
audio. Oh,
no, if you want, we're not documenting.
How dare you tempt me with
fun? I know, we're terrible. Well, it's brownies, but.
You're ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, I am ashamed because I don't have issue.
Oh, it was. So here's the thing. Yes, but the print is terrible. It's super dark. It's almost impossible to read. Like, Marty is just like a black blob anytime he shows up on the page. It's really. Really awkward, and so the collection is like a far vastly superior print of it, but I understand for completion. As far as I know, Rabbit Valley / Fenris
has the best copy, good to see you again.
Should be able to buy one if you want.
Yeah, I'm dealing with a slight problem, though. I got a problem in my left eye. I got to have an operation on Wednesday. So if I seem like I'm blinking or if I put an eye patch on, it's not that I'm playing a pirate. I got to have an operation on my left eye. So, in case you're wondering, but I mean, here it is. It's a very visual thing, and I'm like, bad time to come down with something in my eyes. But anyway, looking forward to the whole thing. Yeah, great.
So this is actually Andrew's book. This is Doug Brown's.
Yeah,
we're waiting
to
do
the last time.
Hello. Another request.
Andy Rinkale.
Already, hi.
Yes, nice to finally meet you.
Yes, likewise.
So it's Steve, Andrew, and Scott.
Yep.
Yes. I thought I saw you on the elevator.
Yes, very entirely possible.
Yes.
All right, can we do that? Let's do that post-panel.
Yeah,
that
would be great. Yeah, if you want to do the post-panel.
No, it's okay. We can do one for sure. I can't be.
Yeah, no.
I'm not that fast a writer.
Yeah, and the other process, I somehow forgot as it here's
right. Do you want to chew Randy?
Work decided that I was going to stay an extra hour and a half.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
So I kind of panicked.
I'm having a magical moment.
Oh. I remember this comment. I love that.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, Scott stole mine.
Well, you had to use Dior.
It'll happen.
We're getting there.
We'll write a review on
Patience is a virtue, and
it's not like I'm hounding you, like, where's the rest of the story? I know you were working on this.
Yeah, there's still like 4 pages left to go or something like that. We'll get it right. I mean, it's written, it's just a matter of.
If you draw Andy on half a sec, a lot more sex here than the show.
Well,
there's a reason. Yeah, there's slightly different.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's free. Okay. I think it's cool. Hi everyone. So I'll get started. My name's Andy, or Ethan. I'm the author of Circles, co-creator along with these two crazy guys up here. I wrote all the scripting for it, but these guys helped out an awful lot in terms of character creation, so I don't claim to be a creator. We're definitely all co-creators. And this is?
I'm Steve. I am one of the co-creators, and we all kind of like cooked up the plot together, and I laid out most of the issues. Jay.
In the back is Jay, the unsung hero of Circles.
Jay, get up here.
Jay did all the technical work, so the physical laying out of pages and the importing of text into comic bubbles and stuff, starting at what, about issue...
Next.
Yeah, like seven or so. Yep. And then the individual books, especially the latest one, have his fingerprints all over them.
So, like, yeah, he just did excellent, excellent work in the later issues.
Thank you.
Great job.
And on my right, we got...
me? All right.
Yeah.
So I'm Scott. I'm an artist.
You're Scott?
What? Well, what? Yeah. Scott.
What?
Okay. Also, Art Mutt and, you know, well, still kind of canine. So that still exists. Yes. And yeah, I was the drawer person and other part of the team.
Yes. Say them, want some brownies?
Oh, God, yes.
Also, everyone, it's Scott's birthday today. It's shorter.
I'll have to remember that next time.
So, yeah, we do have brownies. If you haven't already grabbed a brownie, feel free to come and grab another one.
Recipes in the book.
And, yes, so when we started talking... Owen, come get a brownie, bud. when we started talking about doing this cookbook, the first recipe everyone asked was, is it going to have Doug's brownies in it? I was like...
Sure.
Yes, of course it is. And I'm like, crap, I've never made brownies in my life. I guess I'll have to figure out a brownie recipe. But we'll talk about that as we get to it. So, I mean, we call this panel a Circles Retrospective, which we can talk about whatever y'all want to talk about. If you want to know about the creative process we went through to get there, we can do that. And how we ended up doing a 20 years later. I'm going to change masks. This one is like in my mouth.
Sure.
I love it, but it's going to need some stretching. This is what I look like without a mask.
I've never noticed this is a new one.
Yeah, it's brand new. But the trouble is it's really tight. It needs to get stretched out. But
yeah, there's
a significant difference. Yes, I can talk now. So, I don't know. What do y'all want to know? I mean, if you want to know how we got it started, I'll talk about how it got started.
Yeah, please do.
Okay. So, I told this story at the GOH panel this morning, but the long and the short of it is, it's, you know, 1998 or so, I think, and ASB, Associated Student Bodies, had come out, and it was like a massive hit. It was the first major gay, furry piece of literature. Please come get brownies.
You'd go to a comic book sell out, it's like, boom.
Yeah, it would sell out instantly. Take a couple, grab a napkin, have a party.
So, and it was like, that was it.
That was it. There was nothing else out there.
Pretty much straight furry comics or lesbian furry comics, and that was it.
That was all that there was, and it was a sadness. Not that it was sad that there were these other things, but simply that no one else was stepping up to make a gay furry comic.
Right.
I'll tell you what, while I tell this story, I'm actually going to walk these brownies to the back of the room, because I see people coming in, and I know... It can be really awkward to, like, walk up literally to the front of a room.
Here, you talk.
Yeah.
I'll
you're going to do it? Okay, there you go. Steve, we'll bring the brownies to the back of the room.
Yeah, Steve.
Well, thanks. Thanks for the water, dude.
Thank you.
Thank you, Seven. So, at that time, Waltham, Massachusetts, was a hotbed of the furry fandom. There were a lot of us living there. Steve and Scott and I were all living together in one apartment. Andy and Sean Rabbit were living in an apartment. Somnius, who used to staff for the con, was there. Tilton Raccoon lived there for a while. I mean, there were a lot of furries living in a relatively small area. Basil and Remley used to live there, who run the gaming room right now. So we were like living together and very often hanging out. So we. We're at an AMC theater in Framingham with Sean and Andy Rabbit, and I was griping about the fact that no one was making a gay furry comic. I was like, ASB is done, and it was fun, but like, why is no one else doing anything? It doesn't make any sense to me. It was such a big hit, blah, blah, blah. And Sean finally, I think, was kind of tired of listening to me gripe about it, and was like, look, you're a writer. Steve and Scott are artists. Why don't you guys put a comic together? And if it doesn't suck, I'll publish it. And with that very, you know, low bar thrown in front of us, we decided to make a comic that wouldn't suck. And I said earlier, we used to talk about having like a, I wanted to do an ad of like a kid with like a cereal, like different colored Fruit Loops cereal, giving like a thumbs up, and it was circles, it doesn't suck. But you know, we never did that. But so they basically offered to just have us do a comic, and you know, kudos to the Rabbits. I don't know if circles would have existed without them either. But they gave us a platform to talk, and you know, the three of us, and sometimes with Sean and Andy, would sit down in, I think we were talking about it earlier today, like the genesis of Circles was like in a Chinese restaurant in Moody Street in Waltham, the laundromat right next door, where we would like park and do our laundry. And then an all-you-can-eat buffalo wings restaurant in Jamaica Plain that we used to go to on Mondays, and Bugaboo Creek in Watertown.
Oh, I miss them.
Oh, yeah. Me too. The home of the Trippy Tree. We miss them, too.
Kiss the moose.
Kiss the moose. But so we used to, you know, talk it out, and we slowly put together lists of, I think we started with characters. And the one first thing we said is, look, ASB is nothing but, almost nothing but Twinkie college kids. Like, they're all the same age. There's one fat guy. He's in it for, like, a couple of panels. Like, I want to see what I see when I look around Furry, because I think there's a market for that. And not just a market, but I think people want to hear that story. You know, I came into the Furry fandom and being an openly gay man as, you know, overweight and insecure and unsure, and you know, by the time I was writing the comic, I was in my 30s. I was much more comfortable with who I was and that sort of thing. So, but I was like, well, I remember all of that, and so that became Marty. Like, all of that insecurity and, oh, my body is weird and no one will ever find me attractive. And you know, that was a big deal for us to make sure that there was someone out there, and so many people have responded over the years and said, oh my God, that's me. Like, that was me when I found the fandom, when I first came out as a gay man. Like, that's who I was. So thank you for telling my story. So obviously we hit it okay with that, but we literally came up with lists of like, okay, what do we want these characters to be? And we decided we wanted some older characters. We wanted some younger characters. We wanted some that were, you know, we wanted a gym body. We wanted a twink. We wanted a, you know, a chubby kid. We wanted an older guy who was living with HIV. And like all these different characters sort of evolved. And then we, no joke, created a list of, I think, 16 different species that we thought would be kind of interesting to have as main characters in the book. And we sat down and kind of process of elimination. Scott was like,
what has ASB done?
Yeah, what's already been done? And so we eliminated a bunch of species off the bat, like no lions, you know, not a wolf.
No Timon.
You know, no meerkats. Yeah, exactly. And then we kind of matched it, and then it became, well, Scott, what would you have the most fun drawing? And so that sort of evolved into the six species that became the main characters for the series. And I think you still curse the fact that a cheetah was one of them. And
Marty.
And Marty.
Well,
cheetahs.
Only an issue eight was that. my issue was it was that we had a cheetah and it was the muscle tank top character. I was like, I shouldn't have done a cheetah with him, like, to cover his arms a little more.
Yeah, you should always have been wearing like a full bodysuit or something, so you didn't have to draw some of these spots.
Right. Yeah.
Love that. Marty would just like eventually just squint. Okay, let's just put a color down, and that was like, that'll be quick.
Yeah.
But basically, when we were creating the comic, I would sit down, I would write out an issue and what I thought it would be, and then I would hand it off to Steve, and you would what?
Basically, I would go back in the day when there was paper.
Yes.
We used to have these giant sheets, and I would basically take a script and block it out into so many like squares, and be like, okay, let's put this here, and it'd be kind of like, it's almost like drama Tetris. It's like, okay, like let's carry the scene here. Okay, I can't end it here, so I'll make this like bigger and like a little bit more dramatic, and it's kind of like figuring out where the stops go. and it was almost like, it's kind of like directing a scene, sort of. So you like, all right, here's, you know, here's where Marty is, here's where, you know, Tay is, and he's going to come here, they're going to meet here, talk, and like, okay, now it's going to be a side view. And then I basically put all this down, scripted like who's doing what, like what kind of expression they should have, because I'm not the greatest artist, but I would basically communicate what Scott could take and turn into like fully fleshed actors. So basically I would take these, we would mail them to, well, when Scott was still living with us, we would be like,
it was easy when we all still lived together.
Right. When Scott went down to California,
then we had to really complicated.
Ship them out. But, and then he would take those, basically finish it all up, do all the hard work, and send that off to Rabbit Valley.
And then Rabbit Valley would take it, and they would, you know, import it and get it all printed up and send us a proof, which we had to approve. And then, you know, we would we'd have it. You know, they'd get it all printed up. But what would you do in terms of, like, what was your process?
So basically for me, like, I would take the, like, basically the thumbnail paste out pages from Steve, and I would basically, you know, had comic book paper yet again. This was back in the paper days.
They're huge.
Yeah, the big, you know, comic book. So I, pencil it and then, ink it up. And, things were also slower because we didn't have the instant messaging going, so.
Yes.
It would be like me taking a picture, trying to get it on the computer, trying to send it to him to ask him a question or what. But I'd do the penciling, inking, and then I would basically ship the pages to Sean and Andy because they were the only ones with a scanner big enough.
Yep.
They had to scan the pages. And then they'd come back to you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'd send it all back to us, and then we would kind of say, okay, we're ready to go. And then they would print out a physical proof, or they would send it to a printer, and the printer sent us back these physical proofs, which were basically like, you know, does this look okay? Are you guys ready for us to print this? This is your chance to catch any technical issues that, you know, weren't caught before. And then that would go off to print, and Rabbit Valley handled all the distribution and sales and all that kind of thing. So they made life very easy for us in terms of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then when did you move out? Do you remember what issue it was?
It was after the first issue.
Really? Was
it
that?
Oh, yeah. I made it for one.
I didn't realize that. So, yeah. So Scott was out in California doing the games industry thing.
Yep.
And we were back in Massachusetts, so it definitely led to some lag.
The trouble was the person who took the most time working on the issue was now spending 40, 60, 80 hours at work, and then trying to work on it nights and weekends. So things slowed down from a year?
The comedy is that our intention was like, hey, we can do four of these a year, and it will equate to real time in the comic. Because the comic was written to be 2001, 2002, 2003, and then the last issue was going to be spring of 2004. And yeah, it didn't.
It took a little longer.
It took a little longer. Like, we finished issue 8 in 2008.
Okay.
Yep. It didn't quite. It was like three times the length of time we thought it was going to take. And then your work went absolutely insane.
Yeah.
It was a combination of two things. The issue 8 got. You were asking me about issue 8 earlier. So issue 8 got printed super dark. And if you're a follower of the comic, you probably noticed that when you get to issue 8, if you're reading the individual issues, all of a sudden, like, Marty is like a giant black blob on the page. And
they were trying to rush it out before the con, and we never got proofs.
We never got the proof to approve. There you go. That's where we're airing our dirty laundry gently here. Because at this point, it's very much water under the bridge. But that made it really difficult. It was like, ugh. So that was kind of a morale crusher to some degree. And then on top of that, Scott was just working so many hours.
Brands can't do this.
And people kept saying, is there going to be more circles? Is there going to be more circles? And that's when I finally said, guys, I feel really weird about this, but how would you feel if I finished the story as a novel? Because we knew how the story was supposed to end. Though we always, am I going to be spoiling the ending for anyone? Has anyone here not read the ending of Circles? Okay, so I won't spoil then, but there is an event that happens towards the end of the novel, and we were actually watching to see what was going to happen, because that was going to determine the way that we ended the story. There is something very important affecting the life of one of the main characters, and we were watching very intently, like, anything going to change?
Go.
No? Didn't change by the end of 2003? Okay, we know how the story ends now. So what I took, what became the novel, was just our, you know, our outlines for issues 9, 10, 11, 12. Wait, is that right? 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. There we go.
Right.
Math. And I'm a writer, not a mathematician, by any stretch. But so I wrote that out, and Scott agreed to illustrate it, and that was great. And we brought it out. And then I thought, that was it. Circles is done. I'm never really going to think about it again. Well, not that I'll never think about it, but it's done. And there will never be another Circles product. I don't see any reason to have one. Story's over. Like, the characters are still moving forward with their lives, but one of the reasons that we call it Circles is the idea that everything is cyclical. You never see a story from beginning to end. You just see part of it, because, oh, well, let's say character A...
Ka's a wheel.
Yeah, Ka is a wheel. If you are looking in, you're like, oh, well, this is the story of this person's life. Let's say you told the story from birth to death of a person. That's still not the whole story, because it's just that person. But it doesn't look at, well, who are all these people that influenced this person? And what influence did this person have on other people that they met through their lives? So it was never, the story was only ever thought of as being an arc of this circle that we were talking about. So, and there's a lot of cyclical imagery and very intentional in the comic. So, for example, the way we wrote it was that it would be four issues a year, spring, summer, fall, and winter. And springs were always about beginnings. Summer was always about, like, abundance, usually in terms of family and love and that kind of thing. Autumns were always about change and conflict, and winters were about ending. And so we very deliberately made the last issue number 13. So it was a spring issue. So the end of the story is with a beginning. So, and it's kind of like the beginning of, well, what are all these characters doing in this new phase of their lives? And I think if you read the new Circles, I would refer to that as kind of a late spring, early summer storyline, because it's really about new beginnings, but also abundance and family and that sort of thing. So I was saying that, like, I thought Circles was done, and then one day I woke up and my Twitter account, which usually would have 3 or 4 tags a week, suddenly had 200 overnight, and I'm like, okay, something's up. And I started looking, and what had happened was, I'm sure most of you are familiar with a gentleman by the name of Boozy Badger. So Boozy was, like, learning about Circles, and he was learning about furry in general, and apparently as part of that, someone had said, if you're trying to see what's out there in terms of, like, the different elements of furry, you should read Circles. And was that you? Were you one of those folks?
I was one of those folks.
Nice. So he did. And when he did his big wrap-up thing of assessing the fandom, he was like, there is some real literature in this fandom. And he said, I'm reading a comic that's completely not porn at all, and it's making me emotional. Like, I'm getting caught up in the lives of these fictional characters. And then at one point, he said something to the tune of, I'm reading about a fictional skunk's coming out to his family, and it's making me really anxious. And people started popping up, like, are you reading Circles? And people were like, oh, I love Circles. Oh, man, it was very important to me. And a friend of ours said, well, you know, the authors are here on Twitter and tagged us in. And so all of a sudden, we got hundreds of messages saying, oh, my God, Circles, I love it. And, blah, you know, it's so great. And, and we're like, all right, that's cool. It's nice that people are rediscovering it. And it was about 3 weeks from the Anthrocon that year, which I hadn't been to in 10 years,
something like
10 or 11 years, and Boozy was like, are you coming to AnthroCon? Because if you are, I'm going to buy you a drink. And I said, A, I don't drink. B, No, I have no plans. It's 3 weeks away. I don't have a hotel room or airfare or anything like that. I haven't been to AnswerCon in 11 years. I'm not going. No. Then Joaquin Baldwin, who is a Disney animator, popped up and said, "Are you coming to AnswerCon by any chance? I'm a big fan of your work." And I was like, fuck. Pardon my French. But I was like, that's really big. But man, no, I don't have any. And then someone I had met through Circles was like, "I have room in my hotel room. If you wanted to come to AnswerCon, I could put you up." And Steve was like, "Just go." At this point, go. So I went, and we had a great time, and kind of reconnected. And then the next year, we all went because it was a great time.
And it was like, "Furry is great. It's so great." Like,
I'm remembering like, why I liked being part of this fandom. It's
like, come to AnswerCon. So we all went like the following year, and just had a great time.
Yeah, we did this crazy road trip.
We got back into Furry again, and it was just like really nice. It was cool.
Yeah, it was super cool to be back. And when we were at that AnswerCon, people were like, "The 20th anniversary is coming up. Do you ever envision doing like a Where Are They Now storyline?" And I was like, not really. Like, I kind of feel like the story's done. I don't really want to go anywhere further with it. And at the same con, my friend Dante was like, "Hey, you know what would be really cool? You're always talking about food in the comic. You should make a cookbook for Circles." And I went, "Oh, that's really charming. That's a cool idea." And then these guys were like, "Hey, want to be our guests of honor because it's your 20th anniversary?" I'm like, "Yeah, sounds cool. And you know what? We should probably bring out maybe like a 20 years later epilogue and a cookbook," which is where the new book, that's exactly what it is. To be super upfront about it, the comic in it is short. It's about 24 pages, and yet somehow in there we throw four new characters into the mix.
But the recipes are ours.
The recipes are ours. Yeah, they're things that either are old family recipes of ours or recipes that we've adapted over the years or made.
I forget who said it. It was like,
what's that?
Like, when I serve you food, like I'm giving you like myself. So it's kind of like, it's a really nice way to be like, here are recipes, you know, share them out. It's like, this is kind of like a way to get to know us, you know, like what we eat, what we enjoy.
If you like those brownies, my recipe for them is in that cookbook.
We've enjoyed those brownies so many times.
Oh my god. Because I had never made brownies before writing this cookbook, so I had to learn to make brownies real fast. And I made so many batches until I found that particular formula, like just trying different recipes and going, "This is good, but I think I should tweak it this way." Dave?
Just curious. I had no idea that some of them were actual family recipes. So
Okay.
How does your family feel about that?
Well, I'd ask my babcia, but
she's not with us anymore.
But it was really hard to get recipes from her. So it's basically like, kind of like pulling. I had to like a lot of the Polish recipes. I had to kind of like pull from like my dad and like just working with them and messing around like my cabbage rolls,
which are awesome.
Yeah, they're really good.
I know sometimes some families hold their recipes as sacred things that, you know, aren't to be let out to them.
My family's very, very, very cool about that.
Hey,
hi, Chris.
Chris. So I have a question.
Yes.
Looking back, is there anything you wish you would have known earlier that now you know in retrospect about the creative process or anything?
Yes.
Maybe related, do you have any advice for people who might want to tell their own stories or get into what you all just did?
So I actually was talking about this relatively recently with someone, and it kind of informs the new book. Not so much what I wish I'd known. I wish I could start again and like and write it from now, because there are so many things that I like look back on and say, "Oh man, like I wish." Like, there's so many things like now that I didn't have the language for when we started all this. Like, I wish, you know, I said if I wrote the comic now, there'd be someone in there who'd be on the spectrum, because like I have so many more friends now who like that's a big part of their lives and I want to tell that story. There's like I have so many friends now who are like non-binary gender, you know, and I wish I had done something with that because that's their story. But it's only feels like in the last 10 years we've really started talking about that using that kind of language. It wasn't something I ever had a term for before. So it's like, I wish I could have done that now. There's some of those, both of those things, I will tell you, in the new epilogue comic. One of the characters, the way I wrote them, I definitely was taking cues from some friends of ours who are on the spectrum. And there's one character that I'm very vague about. If we were going to do a comic series based on this group, and I'm not, I don't intend to, I should say, never say never, right? I think it would come out that she is was not necessarily born she, so, or at least not assigned that gender at birth. So, likewise, one of the groups you'll find if you read the comic, one of the couples that we had in the old comic is now a polycule. And it's like, that's again, that's something I'm like, I wish I'd had the language for that a ways back. I probably would have had it happen. You know, so it's interesting, that element of it. Do you guys, anything on your creative process? You would have?
Well, I also want to say, like, a lot of the comics, pretty much every cover, we were surrounded by incredibly talented people and a furry family, and we're like, we asked all of our artist friends to do covers.
Oh, I bet I know.
The person who just asked that question, actually, is Chris Goodwin.
Yep. He did the cover of issue 2.
Yes.
Nice.
So we have like, it's a.
Oh, did you sign this then?
Yeah, it's just like, we're really blessed, like, just to have all these awesome people like help us out and like give us advice like through the process. And
if we had kept going
and changed things,
it's two artists that that we were supposed to have doing covers for us, and I regret that they never got to.
We almost had Stan Sakai.
Stan Sakai was one of them. He was guest of honor at a con we were at, and we hit him up, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'll surely do that for you. We were like, yeah! Fucking awesome. Usagi Yojimbo cover for Circles. And the other one is an old friend of mine, Randy Milholland, who is a webcomic artist who does something called Something Positive, which I show up as a character every once in a while. There's a character named Andy who wears a Circles t-shirt pretty much anytime you see him, and that's me. But he was supposed to do it. One of the things we've always said about the comic is these are human beings. Like, we didn't write them to be a skunk. Marty never gets his tail caught in a revolving door or sprays somebody by accident. Like, that's because Marty's a person. We meant him to be a human being. We always said, we like to draw furries. So we present these characters as furries. They're people seen through a furry lens. And Randy's idea for a cover was to make them all people and have them wearing stylized animal masks. And I thought, that was an incredibly cool idea for a cover. And I really wanted that. And Sean and Andy Rabbit, that was actually one of the few things that they pushed back on us about. They were like, a lot of furries don't like Randy Milholland. I'm like, yeah, but he's awesome. Like, he didn't present furries in the most positive
I think
light.
They personally had some bad blood with the
They may also have had some bad blood. It's very true.
Maybe. I don't know. It's a long time ago.
What about you in terms of your creative process? Anything you wish you knew now?
Yeah, no.
I bet you wish it could have all been digital from the beginning.
Well, yeah. That would have been a lot easier if that not scanned up. No, it really was just like time management and not having it. And like really, I think most of the issues, there's always something about them where I wish I had, you know, more time, or because a lot of times it'd be like a conference was coming and I would have been working on it, but then it was like, okay, I ended up telling my husband, I'm like, I literally just have to do this all weekend, and so it'd be like start Friday night and push through till Sunday to try to like get the last bits done.
Any artist who looks back on their past work just like looks at it and goes, oh, right. Like issue one, I'm just like, why did I do that? What? Oh man, like, and we're just, there's a lot of acceptance that you have to do with your, like, you know, past work. And
I mean, I got to rewrite issue one because when we went from the individual comics to the collection, they asked me to clean up the text, and I was so great being able to make the text more succinct and change things as we went. But there's part of me that would love to go back and rewrite the first couple of issues. I don't think it's until like issue 3 that I'm really happy with the writing on the book. And there's a lot of stuff in issues 1 and 2 that I like, especially issue 2, which, you know, contains one of my favorite quotes by my grandmother of all time. Marty's grandmother is modeled on my real grandmother, and my grandmother was super obsessed with my weight my entire life, or her entire life, because I'm still here and she's not. But and she basically, at one point, legitimately was like, Andrew, you're the most handsome one in the family. Well, you would be if you lost some weight. Like, legitimately, real things. Thanks, my grandma. Thanks, Grandma. I love you, too. And at one point, when my dad met, my dad and Steve and I went with her, she met him for the first time at a restaurant, and then my dad drove her home, and on the way home, she was like, is Steve gay? And our conversation with my dad had been like, you know, we're not going to bother coming out to her, but if she asks, yeah, don't lie, you know, kind of thing. And so my dad went, yeah. She went, oh, okay. And she was quiet for a little bit. And she's like, wait, does that mean, is Andrew gay? And he went, yeah. She said, oh, is it because he's so heavy he can't get girls?
Oh, my God.
Thanks, Grant. Now, I thought that was the funniest goddamn thing I'd ever heard.
His dad was really fixed.
My dad was so angry. I thought it was hilarious. I'm like, go into the comic. Like, that became my life for a while. Was anytime I would hear something that would make me laugh, I'd be like, that's going in the comic. That's famous...
I've been on the boats.
Yeah, Paulie's story about coming out to his father, and I've been on the boats, son! I know what it's like, but it's not love! Is a real story. Not any of ours, but it was a friend of ours' dad, I think. Yep. Like, legitimately said that to him. So as people were telling us stories, we're like,
you wanna hear my poor
do you mind if I put that in the comic? You know, because it was just so spectacular.
Oh my God.
So, too much. Yes, hi. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, Scott.
Yeah.
Chris was saying, is there things that new creators can do? But you've been
discussing
them on Comixology, so.
Right. Well, yeah, well, Comixology is...
But you've been doing... But you've been doing your own stuff with Spatial Enterprise. So.
Right.
So would you say anything about, like, what's, like, creating a new comic from scratch?
Yeah, well, I mean, I got a panel on that later.
That's true.
Oh, see, this is an excellent time to plug Scott's panel.
Tomorrow. Okay. Comic book panel at 4:30. It's 4:30 to 6.
Yeah.
It's really quick before I go to my question. I just want to say, like, I discovered the comic in about 2010. But I was kind of coming to terms with my sexuality and also discovering furry at the same time. So I just want to say that this comic really helped me realize that, you know, being gay was okay. So I want to thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Yes, I always love hearing that. You're not the first person to say it to me, and it always means a ton to me.
Really,
it means a ton every time.
And also, like you mentioned, like, you know, it's not a porn comic. It's nothing sexual, and I also appreciate that it gets. Learn more about what being gay is outside of that environment. So I like that too. But I wanted to ask, you know, you say the story's done, and I'm wondering, you know, money aside, if like a Netflix or someone approached you and said, you know, we want to make this into like an animated story or something.
Yes. So, I mean, I'm always telling stories. For me, it's done because I feel like. Like, to me, Circles ended at the end of issue 13 with the novel, basically. And what you have in the new book is just a little glimpse of, like, 20 years later, where would these characters be? Not that it's like, okay, I have another story to tell you, but just, hey, here's where they are.
Let's check in on them.
And, yeah, I mean, I don't want to spoil things for people who, you know, the comic literally just started being, you know, sold today. So I don't want to spoil things, but it's like, you know, like I said, life goes on. You know, it talks about, okay, is Doug still haunted by the loss of Polly? Is anyone... No, I'm saying these are the questions that it asks.
Yeah, but people haven't really read
that. Oh, yeah, good point. Hmm. So, you know...
Well, he just said 5 seconds ago.
Yeah, just over there.
Yeah, it's a really
good
point.
In one ear, out the other.
Yeah, yeah, don't listen to me. Like, it's like, where are these people? Like, are they all still together? Have they broken up? Are there new family members? You know, like, that is just the kind of question that I love to kind of what if. And as we were, as I was coming up with it, it was like, oh yeah, well this is logical and this is logical, and so we kind of see where everybody ends up. But again, it's not a where it ends up, it's just where they are 20 years later. If I wrote another one 20 years past that, who knows what it would be? It would be totally different. If someone came to me and said, will you make some more Circle stories? Yeah, I mean, I probably could. I don't want to, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I love these characters. I love everything we did about it. They're my kids, you know, it's like, I adore them. But like, for example,
story's been told, then.
Yeah, that story's told. For me, there was a story we had to tell when we started this, and it's done, so I'm happy with it. Now, that doesn't mean I won't tell other stories. For example, I actually write an ongoing weekly comic strip with the artist Ecliptica Fusion.
It's cute as hell.
Called The Pig Pack, which is a story of three polyamorous pigs living with their little nerdy wolf boyfriend. And it's like, it's the three pigs are brothers, the wolf is individually, each of them is boyfriends with him. And
you write that?
What's that?
You write that?
All right.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah. Did you not notice my name in the credits?
No.
So Clippy was looking for a writer, and I had been seeing his art of these characters. I'm like, I love these characters. And I sidled in and I'm like, so you're looking for a writer. I don't know if you know who I am. He's like, do you remember that I did fan art of Circles? I'm like, I do now. And he was like, well, like, I kind of think it, like, you inspired me to work on this project. Of course, I would love to work with you. And so we started doing it, and it's really fun, and it's very silly, and it's super different in tone. It's written as, like, this could be a comic strip that you find in a paper. So it's super challenging to do four panels and a joke. Four panels with a joke. You know, it's really very, very different writing, and it's really fun. But also these overarching stories, and who are these characters, and who are the people around them.
It's great, because Andy will tell me the joke, or give me the gist of the comic, and then he'll show me the roughs that Clippy's doing, and it's like, just the reaction that they have, I'm like, that is amazing. Like, yeah. He just comes up with the craziest shit.
Clippy's great, and he brings so much life to everything that I just write him these like, very bare-bones scripts with a few directorial concepts, and the next thing I know, he's like done this incredibly fully fleshed strip, and he's like just imbued so much life into these characters and, you know, what they're doing, you know, as they're sitting around talking to each other or whatever. So if you're looking for more stories from me, that's one way to look for it. But yeah, I mean, I'll always tell more stories. I run D&D all the time, and it's just storytelling, 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 storytelling. That's what I do. I am a storyteller. When people ask, you know, when you define yourself, what do you think you are? And I'm like, I'm a storyteller. Like, beyond being a writer, I'm a storyteller. I'll tell you tales all day, you know. So, hi, what's up, Sam?
I actually have a, at what point in the creation process did you guys come up with Jason?
Ah, I know the answer to that, actually. So, issue one came out, and Basil, from the, you know, he used to be con chair of this con, was our very close friend. He had lived with us at one point. And he said, you know what would be really interesting is if one of the characters had been married at one point, or had had a kid. And I kind of thought about that, and I was like, that's actually a really excellent idea. And so we talked about it. We said, yeah, I have friends who are gay people who had not come out to themselves and got married and had kids and then were like, well, I'm actually gay and this is awkward now, you know, kind of thing. So my stepbrother is one of those people. So that was a really interesting thing to get to explore, but it was pretty early. Like, we had issues 1 through 13 fleshed, at least kind of penciled out in terms of what's going to happen with the story. But I don't remember what 6 originally was going to be, because it changed real quick when we got into the idea of Jason and bringing him in. I thought that was a super interesting story to tell, and I had a lot of fun with it. And Jason, especially in the novel, fleshed out into one of my favorite characters in the comic, because it was fun to write. It's like, okay, you're a straight kid growing up in a house literally full of gay men, like, especially if one of them is Polly, who's nothing but love, family, love, family. Like, who does that make you as a person?
so when that's like such an influential part of your life. And I really came to love that character as we proceeded. So he has a pretty big part in the little epilogue comic, and one of the main character, one of the four new characters is directly related to him. So yes.
Not having read it yet, are there any, are you left feeling that you told the story you wanted to tell, or are there any situations where you had to make creative compromises and you still kind of wonder, well, maybe we should have done that, but we ultimately didn't because you were worried about, I don't know, creating something too controversial or whatnot?
I mean, the only Anakin thing was just
issue of love.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even a compromise. We initially, without getting into this is so hard to do without spoilers.
What were you thinking?
Oh, no, I was just thinking that there was...
Oh, the ending?
No, I was thinking that we were planning, that one issue that was just going to be kind of fun. But because we ended up...
Oh, the superhero story?
Well, yeah, there was
a... It's one still issue. There.
Well, it's still there, but it wasn't like... Yeah.
So...
But, like, to the degree that we...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, so the two issues I would say didn't come out... I guess you would say the way we'd intended were issues 10 and 11, which are in the novel, because 10, there's like a kind of a dream sequence in 10, and Scott and I had talked about some crazy stuff about like switching genres and art styles and things to reflect the nature of a dream, the way dreams go so weird, you know, kind of thing. And it's like you see the dreams of all the different characters in the house. And like the idea was each one was going to be very stylistically different from the others. Now I've kind of forgotten about that idea. So, but issue 11? Again, I don't want to spoil anything, but let's say that there is a moment of infidelity by one of the main characters who's in a very, you know, tight relationship with one of the other characters. And we had originally envisioned that moment of infidelity as being much larger than that when we, you know, started the series. But then by the time we got to issue 11, it was like, they wouldn't do this to each other. Like, they're not going to do that, even under the all the things where we knew there was mutual attraction and, you know, there's a little bit of partying and drugs involved, you know, but it's like, I just forget this character. The character he's about to have a moment of infidelity with is going to go, no, even though I'm attracted to you and I'm a little high, I'm not going to do that because that would destroy so-and-so. So I told these, like, I started to try and write it the way we had it planned, and I contacted these two, and I'm like, I can't write this. Like, it was kind of a fun, almost titillating idea when we came up with it, but now it's like, I feel really bad about it. Like, I feel... Like,
this is untrue.
This is untrue to who these characters have become. We can't do it. And so we toned it down. And there's still this moment, which causes a lot of guilt and hurt feelings, but then also made it easier to kind of continue with the story from there. Because I think we all felt that this is much truer to who these people are now. So.
Right.
So that's the only two things I can think of. The rabbits were super great about giving us massive creative control. They were like, it's your stuff. Like, we'll publish it. You know, we want to read it and maybe, like, just offer a suggestion here and there.
They've never really censored us.
But they never, other than the Randy Mulholland cover, they never really censored us. And I bet if I had fought for Randy, I mean, we never got to an issue for him to do it.
Right.
I'm sure
we really pushed.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Thank you.
Oh, no, pleasure. Where are we here? It's 3:45. We've got the room for 15 more minutes.
All right.
Yes?
So I thought when the series began, it was supposed to be 16 issues, one covering 4 years of college. For some reason, I thought it began in the fall when Marty began his first semester freshman year of college and moved into the house at that time. But yeah. obviously I'm remembering it.
That
somebody got that was supposed to cover a 4 year period, 16 issues.
Yeah, no, we'd always intended it to be 13 issues starting in the spring. There is an issue zero, which is in the collection, where basically we wrote that for Rabbit Valley was bringing out a catalog, and we wanted to put a little preview in it. So we wrote this five page comic that kind of introduces a couple of characters
and introduces Marty at the very end looking at a, hey, there's a room for rent, you know, kind of thing. And so when issue one begins, it's kind of like, oh, this is Marty showing up to check out the apartment. But that's, yeah, it's not fall, it's spring. And we never intended it to be the story necessarily of Marty's, like, college days. That wasn't, that just wasn't the story. Like, Marty's 20 when the story begins, so he's already been in college for a year, 2 years or so. It's just the story of their lives when they're all together, basically.
Then I'm basically remembering the setup wrong.
Oh, it's okay.
Well, that's cool.
It's been 20 years. Yeah. I don't remember everything about
it. So Andy was like, Andy was from the outset, 13 issues.
That was very big for me. Yeah, music's
one season in a movie.
Six seasons in a movie. You know, the idea of that cycle was super important to me from the very beginning. And I was like, I think I'd like to say I'm the one who came up with the title Circles. It's based on the Harry Chapin song Circle, which I think all the collections are lyrics from that song. Yeah. So the titles, what are the titles of the collection? You got them right back. Yep. Or you got a couple of them.
Feels Like I've Been Here Before.
That's from it.
No Straight Lines Make Up My Life.
That's from it.
As the Years Keep Rolling By.
That's from it.
And Let's Go Around One More Time.
Yep. So, and like, and when I thought of Let's Go Around One More Time, I'm like, freaking perfect. Like, that's exactly what I wanted. Like, I was like, what are we going to call this new story? Wait a minute. You know, all I did was sit down and look at the lyrics to that song again. I'm like, yep, there it is. So, and it's, and the song, predictably enough, is about the nature of how life and relationships are very circular. And it's like, you know, the chorus of it is, all my life's a circle, sunrise and sundown. The moon rolls through the nighttime till the daybreak comes around. All my life's a circle, but I can't tell you why. The season's spinning around again, the years keep rolling by. So it's just like, and it's, that's the whole gist of it is like, things, the more, it's kind of a, the more things change, the more they stay the same, you know. Like I say, you know, things come around in circles, so you'll see a lot of cyclical imagery in the book. It's very, very big, where like, even into the new epilogue, where it kind of starts in a similar way to the first issue of the comic, so, where, but with a very different character doing something another character was doing in the first issue, so.
Yep. It made me cry.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was the idea. I actually
that was
very
the idea.
Yeah, no, legit. My legit impression was to have people go like, oh, and then go, oh, okay, and then to have people go, oh, this character is now doing what that character used to do. You know, was very, very much meant to be an emotional like moment of realizing that.
Callback.
Well, sometimes, you know, without spoiling. Sometimes people leave our lives, you know, whether it's through, you know, a relationship ending or people moving away or what have you. And sometimes people step in to fill that gap and kind of take up the role and do what, you know, this other person was doing because someone's got to do it, basically. So, what else we got? We got, my phone doesn't want to tell me. We have 10 minutes. Yes. Hang on a second.
Yeah. Who would you say you are, which character are you most like?
Yeah, I think we all have answers for that. I'm Polly. 100% I'm Polly. Without the illness, thankfully. But I am the oldest one in the house. I am 53 now, which is the age, or I'm turning 53 next month, which is the age that Polly was at one point in the series. I'm not British, obviously. But I am a massive Beatles fan. Especially when I was writing this comic, I called everyone dear. We actually own the house that the Circle House is based on, by the way. It's a real house. It was my grandmother's house. And when the time came to figure out the layout of the Circle's house so we could keep consistent, I basically drew a very rough hand-drawn sketch for Scott. And I'm like, this is the layout of the house. Here are some photos of the house. So it's a real place. And sure enough, it's full of furries and gay furries. And, you know, so I felt very much like Polly always, like kind of the older I'll say, mother figure of the house. You know, it's just kind of the role that I take. When I was younger, Marty 100%. Marty is based on a young me, for sure. So, what about you guys?
Arthur.
Yeah? I can see that.
I would say started Marty, but probably Arthur at this point.
There you
but
go.
Yeah, I have my game development days, and, you know, I mean, still play them, but don't make them anymore. And now I'm just old and grumpy.
You're not old and
grumpy.
Tay was pulled pretty heavily from her old roommate Baker.
Yep. We had a housemate Baker who Tay was very much based on.
Kangaroo. He was very theatrical.
Yep. So. Summer, you started asking questions.
Yeah, I actually looked through the cookbook portion and noticed that you defined what the heck some of the terms are.
Yeah.
Which is something that I don't see in very many cookbooks or recipes, so thank you.
You're welcome.
The other half was the party advice and how to throw it and everything. What made you guys decide to add those both sections?
So I did most of the writing on the cookbook, shocking, I know. But when I mentioned the idea of doing a cookbook, a lot of friends and furries said, well, I've never cooked before, but now I'll want to give it a shot, you know? And I was like, we should probably put something in here that's like a real basic section. Good. Because when I learned to cook, it would drive me crazy when I'd like read it and it's like, chiffonade, you know, the basil, and like, what the hell does that mean? So I was like, I know now, I'm a super experienced cook now, but when I first started learning how to cook, I was baffled by a lot of terminology, and it frustrated me that I had to kind of go and figure out what that meant. So I thought having a section that defines a lot of the technical terms you find in cooking, that it says, these are some of the essential things you should have in your kitchen if you're gonna work on these recipes, was gonna be a super helpful thing to people who were starting out with this as like the first cookbook that they might have ever looked at. So I wanted that in there. Partying is just, we love parties. We have a theoretically annual, i.e. we were going to have an annual and then the pandemic interfered, huge party that we call Contiki, because it's supposed to be like a miniature furry con, basically, and with a tropical island theming to it. And so we love those kinds of kooky parties. My family always had these giant summer parties.
New Year's Eve, I do a Polish dinner for everybody.
Yeah, so we do Halloween parties pretty much every year. So we wanted there to be a chapter, because that's a really fun social aspect. And food isn't just necessarily, this is for sitting down and doing a dinner. It's like, half the time I make food, it's to bring to a friend's house for something. And so I wanted there to be, you know, a chapter on that kind of, you know, that's, if you read through the book, there's tons of parties all through the book, including the brand new comic is all about a party that they're having together. So I just thought it would be a fun thing to throw in.
It's all very good advice.
Oh, thank you.
And everyone can feel safe that none of the recipes are mine.
We ask questions.
Yeah, you asked, and I was like, I don't think open can put SpaghettiOs on the oven.
I will say, I put some recipes in there that are, like, you're going to find stuff like, ooh, my, you know, the brownies kind of thing, and, like, really complicated recipes in some cases. You're also going to find my recipe, for example, for a microwave chocolate cake that you make in a, like a coffee mug. Because it can't always be, all right, let's get all the super fresh ingredients and make it for 30 people. Sometimes you're home alone and you want chocolate cake. And you're going to make that in your microwave in a mug.
You don't have to put on a show.
You don't have to put on a show. You can make, and there's a lot of recipes if you look. I'm like, yeah, you can do this, but you don't have to. Just do this. And there's a lot, pretty much every recipe has a section of variations and tips. Because cooking is, like, really fun. And you can really play around with it and really change things up and make every, I highly encourage you to write in this book and make these recipes your own and change things and do it your way.
I might have to buy a second copy.
What's that?
I might have to buy a second copy.
Well, that's for sure. I can't help it. But I'm just saying, I encourage you to not just follow this recipe.
Yeah, if something sounds weird, go to YouTube, see how someone else does it. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Like, oh my god, like the recipe for Bigos?
Yeah, Bigos.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. Like,
Franken Bigos.
Yeah, Bigos is like a big deal in the Polish community.
It's like a hunter's stew.
It's like the Polish stew. It's got
mushrooms,
sauerkraut, meat, mushrooms, like whatever. Basically, it's like leftovers. Just dump it in there. So we're like, prunes and no.
Yeah, we literally couldn't find a single Bigos recipe that we 100% agreed on. So Steve and I were like, eh. So we started taking bits and pieces from different recipes to make our Bigos recipe. And it's the way I always make it. But like, and then Steve's dad was like, you know, if you really want to throw the flavor up, get 2 packets of beef ramen, toss the noodles, and throw those flavor packets in your Bigos. And I'm like,
okay.
Okay. And I do every time. And the flavor is fantastic. So it's like, all right, cool. So Alton Brown, who is probably my culinary idol, had a great quote. He said, you can follow a recipe just like you can follow a set of street directions, and you get where you're going. You'll make it whatever it is you're trying to make. But you won't know that from around the corner from there, there's like an awesome restaurant that you went to once upon a time. For that, you need a map. And you need to kind of find your own way. And I love that idea that, you know, any recipe is directions. But I also tried to do what he does in a lot of his books, to say, try this, do this. You can change this if you do it this way. The brownies in particular, we found out by accident, you could really change the texture of the brownie depending on how many eggs you put in. So I the basic recipe, which is for a 9x9 pan, calls for 2 eggs. If you drop that to 1 egg, you're gonna get super crispy brownies, which are awesome, and they're like Steve's favorite. If you up it to 3 eggs, you're gonna get unbelievably gooey brownies, which I really dig too. These are the middle of the red brownies.
I don't complain, but.
Yeah, but that we found that out totally by accident one day when I screwed up a batch, and it was like, wait, these are great. So, you know, when I ultimately sat down to write out the recipe, I specifically state in the variation section, this is what you can do to change this up. So, yeah.
Other than ASB, which you've mentioned before, yes, and your own personal experiences, is there anything that you'd say informed your writing of Circles?
Rent. The musical. Massive influence on the comic. I was listening to it almost constantly about 3 months before we started writing the comic, and it informed a lot. Obviously, it's probably the main reason I wanted to include an HIV positive character in was because that was so much in my head. It informed a lot to do with the nature of Tay. You know, we had Tay playing Angel, who's one of the characters from the play. So that's, you know, definitely Rent, a big, big thing. A lot of people ask if Tales from the City, Armistead Maupin's thing. I had never read it when I wrote Circles. And then I looked and was like, oh yeah, Polly does resemble Anna Madrigal quite a bit, doesn't he? So that was a funny coincidence, but not. And I think that's probably just because of the common experience of being a gay man living around other gay men.
Grabbing other people to your family.
Yeah, because a lot of gay people, you know, found themselves suddenly without their birth families for, you know, unfortunate reasons. A lot of older gay men had a tendency to go, I'm gathering you into my found family. And if there's any theme in Circles beyond the cycle of things, the idea of the found family is probably the biggest one. That your blood family is important. There's no way to get around the fact that you are blood genetically related to a bunch of people. However, over the course of your life, you're going to create your own family. Whether that's by marrying somebody or making a friend so close you think of them as a brother, you know, or anything along those lines. And those people are legitimately just as important to you, if not more so, than the people you happen to be blood related to. I love my blood family. Like, my brother and my sister and my nephew, I adore them. I loved my parents. I got along pretty good with my grandparents, as you just heard. But in my own way, I love Steve's parents. Steve's parents are fantastic. But my found family, these guys up here and the other people in my life are so important to me. And that's, I think, something everyone should really look at in their own lives and realize how important those people are and cherish them, because you don't have them forever. You know, whether it's happenstance or people moving or illness or what have you, you know, these people come and go in our lives and they're so important. And that's a very, very big theme of the comic, I would say. Mm. Any last questions? We're kind of,
yes.
We're at four, so.
I thought one last, to keep it brief. You were talking about drawing inspiration. The show, the U.S. show, Queer as Folk.
Sure.
This comic really reminds me a lot of the ensemble cast, the queer aspect. Did you draw any of the inspiration from that show?
I have never watched a single episode. I'm aware of it, but no, not a single bit. It was, if there are, I know nothing about it. If there are any, you know, this character seems a lot like this character. Again, I think that's just the commonality of the gay experience.
Their inspirations were Rent, Angels in America.
Oh, Angels in America. That was a big influence, yes. Excuse me for forgetting that one, so, for sure. Our lives and the Beatles, Harry Chapin.
It's like we just kind of wanted to write our own story. It's like, we'll try and stay ignorant from these other sources for a while, so.
Yeah, largely. Now, I know people have stuff they want us to sign, and I am more than happy to do so. I think we all are. I'm going to suggest that we give them back this panel. Well, is there anything in this panel room next? Do we know?
I don't think so.
Cool, let's hang. No, I'm sorry. If people want us to sign stuff, we got writing implements. I am more than happy to sign. If someone comes in and needs us to scram because they need the panel room, I'll scram.
Someone just give me the book. Okay.
Not till 5 o'clock.
Well, thank you all so much. 5 o'clock. Please take some brownies. Don't make me take them back to our rooms.
You have a right. All right. So we each have a right.